The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading Doofender Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with a little bit of giggles. Department of Wit, my concession speech, appropriate for this period of time. Though the election for president of his house ended in defeat, this member of the loyal opposition prefers to go out with his head held high. By Andy Simmons. And there's a cartoon of him standing there with his arms raised and American flags behind his thing and a podium that states Dad and a button that says Vote for Andy. My fellow Americans, earlier this year I threw my hat into the political arena and announced my candidacy for president of our house, 347 Elm Street. My goal was simple, unseat the incumbent, my wife, Mommy, who I believed had grown careless in how she handled the affairs of our home. I ran on a strict law and order platform, finished one jar of peanut butter before opening another one, no talking to me when the Mets are battling, if you take a slice of pizza, close the box so the rest of the slices stay warm, and no matter how much whining and cajoling, we are not buying a dog. My qualifications to take this household of three in the right direction were evident. I was and remain the only one in the family who can open pickle jars. I was and remain the only one who can remember the Amazon Prime password. And I was and remain the only one who doesn't scream when he sees small bugs. I was and remain the best dad. See my coffee cup. It was a close contest that saw me make many inroads during the debates, where I pressed my opponent in the hottest topics of the day. On infrastructure spending, I made a bold stand insisting, if it's not broken, you have to jiggle the handle. On the other issue of transportation, I questioned my rival's refusal to make left-hand turns. And on health care, I fought the lonely battle against buying a dog, reminding everyone, I'm allergic! But tonight, the votes have been cast, the ballots tallied, the people of the great house, of this great house, have spoken. I respect their decision, and while I take great pride in how close this election was, 2-1, it is clear that I will not be your next president. Only minutes ago, I turned to my opponent, sitting next to me on the couch, and congratulated her. She nodded graciously before raising the volume on the TV as she continued to watch another episode of Succession. As contentious as this campaign has been, it is now time to unite our home around the winner. I call for all my supporters, namely myself, to fall in line to ensure a smooth transition from the previous Mommy administration to the next Mommy administration, which will mark her 21st term in office. Although I will not be serving as your president and commander-in-chief, I will continue to fight for the things that my campaign stood for, especially the one about the peanut butter. Now, as I prepare to end my campaign and take our new dog out for a walk, I thank each and every voter, no matter whom you recklessly voted for, and may God bless 347 Elm Street. And, of course, for your information, the next page was an advertisement for dog food. News from the world of medicine. Vegetarians may have a higher risk of stroke. In an 18-year study of 48,188 people with no history of heart disease, vegans and vegetarians had a 22% lower risk of developing heart disease than meat eaters, but a 20% higher risk of suffering a stroke. Researchers speculate that this is because of their low vitamin B12 levels. While there may be other factors, if you follow a vegan or a vegetarian diet, considering boosting your intake of B12 through supplements or fortified foods such as cereal. Gut bacteria could help you run longer. In 2015, researchers at Harvard University found that in the week after the Boston Marathon, runners in the race had a higher concentration of a bacteria called Vianella, which helps burn down the lactic acid that forms in muscles. The researchers then took a strain of the bacteria from one of the marathoners and injected it into mice, and sure enough, the mice ran 13% longer than the mice who had received a different type of bacteria. This suggests that someday those mice and those marathoners could help create a probiotic supplement containing Vianella to help you become a better runner. Now, if this information is out there, I wonder if in the Olympics that's going to be called doping. Lyme disease in leaves. When you have finished raking this fall, be sure to move the leaves a good distance away from your house, or to get rid of them completely. A recent study found that ticks love to set up shop in piles of leaves. The researchers counted three times the number of black-legged ticks in and around these piles come springtime, as they did in areas without leaves, said co-author Robert Jordan, Ph.D., a research scientist with the Monmouth County Division of Mosquito Control in New Jersey. To reduce your risk of contracting Lyme disease and other tick-borne illnesses, deposit leaves in low-use areas of your yard or deep in the woods, or employ a curbside pickup service. Gingivitis in the brain. A University of Louisville study that the bacteria behind chronic gum disease may migrate to the brain. What's more, the Polymorphous gingivitis bacteria then releases toxins called gingipanes that can attack areas involved in memory and critical thinking, which may eventually lead to dementia and Alzheimer's. This doesn't necessarily mean that gingivitis causes Alzheimer's, though a Taiwanese study has already found that living with gingivitis for more than 10 years increases the risk of Alzheimer's by as much as 70%. One key takeaway, floss. Dermatological conditions more than skin deep. Psychological support isn't usually part of caring for skin problems such as acne and vitiligo, but it should be, according to a survey by the British Skin Foundation, BSF. Skin conditions can be burdensome for a number of reasons, such as the pain they cause or long-term treatment regimens they require, says Andrew Thompson, Ph.D., a BSF spokesman and a professor of clinical psychology at Cardiff University. Psychological treatment can address emotional and behavioral reactions that sometimes aggravate skin conditions, such as stress and scratching. It can also improve quality of life, Thompson says, for example, by building confidence to return to previously avoided activities. The surprising fast-acting benefits of cleaner air. We're accustomed to thinking of environmental change and its attendant effects on our health as being measured in years. But researchers are now discovering how quickly and dramatically air quality can improve and how big an impact those improvements can make. For instance, when Atlanta hosted the 1996 Olympic Games, parts of the city were closed to cars for 17 days. In the following 4 weeks, kids' medical visits for asthma decreased by more than 40%. In 1990, when Hong Kong passed strict regulations for the content of fuel oil used to power plants and cars, sulfur dioxide levels immediately fell by 45% on average, and as much as 80% in the most polluted areas. Within 6 months, there was a significant decrease in the number of deaths from respiratory and cardiovascular diseases. In March 2020, when businesses shut down because of the coronavirus pandemic, nitrogen dioxide levels were about 30% lower on average in the northeastern United States than they were in the same month for the 2015 to 2019. Also during the month that China was under quarantine because of the pandemic, one study estimated that improved air quality helped prevent more than 12,000 pollution-related deaths, with a recent study showing that an increase of just 1 microgram per cubic meter of fine particulate matter is associated with an 8% increase in the COVID-19 death rate. Measures to improve air quality may become more important than ever before. Caffeine limit for migraines. Researchers and migraine sufferers have long known that caffeine can affect headaches. Now a study has looked closely at the triggering quantities and found that 3 caffeinated beverages, coffee, tea, or soda, in a day increase the migraine risk. The risk is greater for people who typically drink less than that in a given day. Timing of opioid prescriptions. An analysis of data from 678,319 patients found that physicians were 33% more likely to prescribe opioids during late-day appointments and 70% more likely to do so if the appointment was running later than scheduled. Prescriptions for non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, and physical therapy were not affected by appointment timing. All in a day's work. And there's a cartoon of a mime sitting at a desk with a laptop computer, and on the laptop computer, a comment is, "Joel, are you on mute?" That might be a visual joke rather than a... This is why it's called work. I tied my hair back into a ponytail for work before teaching. It kept coming undone, so I used a rubber band to hold it. Later, I was reprimanded for misusing school supplies. Someone tried to return a defective item without a receipt. After explaining that I could not find where she had paid for the item, she yelled back, "It's not my fault you people didn't catch me." I was listening to the radio at work when a girl near me screamed. Then a girl on the radio screamed. The show was about bad jobs. It was her calling in while still at work. Now that's funny. My dad, a pastor, was attending a national Nazarene convention when a woman pointed to an empty seat and asked, "Is this seat saved?" Dad replied, "No, but we're praying for it." A letter arrived at our post office with the address crossed out and this message scribbled next to it: "Addressee doesn't live there anymore. Thank God." It's a problem that the machine I used to do work It's a problem that the machine I used to do my work also has a function where you can shop for new duvet covers for 3 hours. At times, student evaluations meant to put professors on the firing line revealed more about the pupils who wrote them. "There was too much math expected of us," course title, Math for Special Education Teachers. For a European History to 1500 course, a student was upset that I didn't include more about China during World War II. Too many women writers, course title, American Women Writers. The student level that I remember to this day. He knows more than I do, and that makes me feel bad. Must be a millennial. She should wear more green. Professor wanted to be here less than we did. Take a left at the giant hiker. Smithsonian is a small country with a big sense of humor. Case in point, Swiss cartographers like to hide figures such as the hiker and fish in their maps, and it's a picture of a map, and in it is a very small picture of a fisherman sitting beside a lake pulling a fish out of the lake. We found a fix. 8 tricks to improve your life. That's interesting. It's usually 13. Number 1, give pumpkin to your dog. Pets, you're not only the one who might enjoy a little pumpkin flavor this fall. Veterinarians often recommend winter squash for an array of doggy digestive dilemmas. Be sure to avoid pre-made pumpkin pie mix in a can, which contains spices and sugar your pet does not need. Also, check with your veterinarian to see how much is recommended for your dog's size. Too much can cause diarrhea. Number 2, flush your anxieties. When John has a seemingly unplungible clog, try quickly dumping a bucket of water directly into the bowl's drainage hole before calling a Pricer plumber, recommends Tim Carner, master plumber and founder of Ask the Builder. The rapid stream may break up the blockage and create a suction effect in the toilet's U-shaped bend that'll send the contents out without so much of a jiggle as a handle. The trick I also wish is a do-it-yourself flush if nature desperately calls when your water is shut off. Yeah, but how are you supposed to get a bucket of water if your water's shut off? Interesting. Somebody didn't think on that one. Shave away sweater fuzz. Just because a well-loved sweater is starting to peel doesn't mean you have to toss it. To get rid of the fuzz, pull the sweater taut over a surface such as an ironing board and run a razor or beard trimmer delicately along the grain. Sorry about that. Make a plant greenhouse. Planning that long-delayed weekend getaway but worried about your house plants? Cover each plant with a plastic bag with some holes poked in it, making sure the plastic isn't touching the leaves, and place the pots in a shady spot. The plastic will retain moisture and recapture some of the plant's natural transpiration, creating miniature water cycles in your green things. Your cutlery affects your diet. People tend to eat more ice cream with a fancy spoon than with an ordinary-looking one. According to one study, a wisdom-wheel serving spoon shaped like a mini person with a funny hairdo caused participants to want to have fun and scoop more ice cream. There's a corollary in bowl size, too. One study found that even nutritionists serve themselves 31% more ice cream when they use a larger bowl. Number 6. Pool noodles can save your phone. Few things are more annoying than losing your phone or wallet in the gap between the driver's seat and the center console. You can stop the problem for good with a standard pool noodle. Just trim it to the length of the seat and a width of about 3 inches, then plunge it in the gap. Defat soups and stews, number 7. Want to get some of the fat out of your homemade soup or stew as quickly as possible? Fill a metal ladle with ice. Gently skim the bottom of the ladle across the soup's surface for a few seconds and then remove it. The fat will cling to and freeze against the metal and come right out with the ladle. Number 8. Unsent and errant email. Who among us hasn't fired off an email only to realize a second too late that we misspoke or made a typo? Gmail allows you to pull that message back before it goes anywhere, In Settings, look for the field called Undo Send. Selecting the 30-second option will give you the maximum window of time to undo your gaffe. Oh, that's cool. On-the-go pain fix. Hand, wrist, and other small joint pain can be a big problem for many. The innovative No Mess, No Touch Pain Block 24 Pain Pen is small and easy to use, delivering pain delivery medicine right where you need it. And I'm sorry, but that was an ad. Wasn't well marked as such. Your true stories. Grandma's Square Pants. When my granddaughter Eva was a toddler, I visited her family on Halloween. I've been making my own Halloween costumes to go trick-or-treating with my grandkids since 1998. I made myself a SpongeBob SquarePants costume the year I visited Eva. After I returned home, Eva was at a store with her parents when they saw a poster with a picture of SpongeBob on it. They asked Eva, "Do you know who that is?" She did indeed. She said, "That's Grandma." Merry Halloween. Every year, my daughter and son-in-law host a Halloween party. They decorate their house inside and out and have a highly competitive costume contest. Last year, my daughter posted a complaint on Facebook that stores were setting up Christmas displays in September and not paying any attention to Halloween. So, of course, we had to show up at the Halloween party dressed as Christmas trees. We won the prize for most embarrassing costumes. Who let the dogs in? My wife and I went to a Halloween party with our daughter Molly at her school. After we arrived, the security guard called for the custodian, my wife's brother, Molly's uncle, to come and help her with three dogs that had gotten into the building. The look on his face when he saw us, with the spots I had painted all over our sweater, shirt, and pants, was priceless. The Witches of Sunset Valley. It wasn't a dark and stormy night, but given my mood, it would have been fitting. It was Halloween, my favorite time of the year, and I was on my way to visit my mom, who had suffered a debilitating stroke. I arrived dressed as a witch, not quite sure if it was to lift her spirits or my own. Mom laughed, and I felt every second of it. I didn't want to detach from that positive note, so I remained in costume, even when there was time to leave. I noticed some buses passing on their way to a nearby elementary school. I waved, they waved back, and so it began. Over the next 12 years, a coven grew. Now it includes mothers, grandmothers, and great-grandmothers. We gather our broomsticks, cauldron, and various other decorations to set the scene in Mom's home, Mom's front yard. A steady stream of horns resonates, along with waves and smiling faces as cars, buses drives by. Numerous requests for pictures, enthusiastic comments on social media, and one very generous gift of a bottle of wine were all greatly appreciated encouragements for us to continue. We witches of Sunset Valley love what we do and always look forward to the next year when we can wish everyone a happy Halloween. The food on your plate. I am mushrooms, a magic, wild, meaty treat. I'm not an animal, a plant, or a mineral. Take a minute to get your head around what a crafty 20-question choice that makes me. Infuriating little brothers and sisters on car rides everywhere? What is it? They shout, to which their torturer finally answers, "I, mushroom, and a fungus." I do keep you humans guessing. I am both edible and toxic, vegetarian yet meaty in flavor, wild and domesticated, a contemporary health craze and an ancient remedy. I can send your mind on a wild hallucinogen flight. I can also kill you. And I come from a mysterious, much larger organism underfoot that you can barely comprehend. I am its fruiting body. In fact, as it spreads invisibly underground or through the fibers of a log, you can pick me as you do an apple off a tree. But you will leave almost all the superorganism behind. These root-like threads you occasionally spy on my stem, they are not roots but fragments of my spreading life form. These delicate frills sheltered beneath my shelf or cap, they are marvels of evolutionary engineering, gills from which I release my spores by the billions. I like to think of as matrix origami. If you could lay the unfolded gills of just one button mushroom flat, they'd cover a desktop. I'd wager that when you hear my name, you imagine the umbrella-capped toadstool of not only white button mushrooms, but also fairy tales, fables, Super Mario Brothers, and Smurfs. But that image is falsely narrow. I can grow like shelves on a tree trunk, round like marshmallows, translucent and gelatinous like jellyfish, and in a cascade of spines that, in case of a lion's mane mushroom, look like a long white beard. Even the ubiquitous white button mushroom started as a peculiarity, discovered in Pennsylvania nestled in a bed of brown Kurmini mushrooms. Though it looks different from the Kurmini, both are variants of the same species. The portobello, meanwhile, is just an extra-large Kurmini. In the kitchen, no matter my variety, oyster, shiitake, enoki, there are hundreds of edible ones. I add deep, savory flavor. I am one of nature's best meat stands-ins for flavor, texture, and heartiness. I just scratch that itch, making me appeal to vegetarians and omnivores alike. To properly bring out all that flavor, cook all my water over high heat, then brown me in a pan. Use me in a filling for pastas and dumplings such as ravioli and pierogi. Cook me in cream or tomatoes, and I'll make a pasta so rich and filling you won't miss the meat. I'm great on meat, though, including as duck sails, the thick mixture of minced mushrooms and shallots that is the key ingredient of beef Wellington. There's some misguided kitchen folklore about how you should never wash a mushroom because it strips away flavor. This is almost always not true. Go ahead and wash me. Just make sure to dry me well so that I brown properly. Wild mushrooms, chanterelles, morels, truffles, and anonymous because they grow underground, really can be intoxicatingly tasty, but they are hard to find and therefore more pricey than their cultivated cousins. Conversely, if a restaurant touts wild oyster, shiitake, or Kurmini special, beware. Those varieties are farmed. Lore abounds about mushroom hunters who sneak out early in the morning and park their cars stealthily for fear of being followed to their shroomy stashes in the woods. Perhaps most valued is the white truffle from Alba in the Piedmont region of Italy, whose musty aroma shouts when it's shaved over buttered fresh pasta or a fried egg. In 2007, a Hong Kong Macau casino magnate spent $330,000 on a three-pounder, a sign that my prestige has overtaken any rational appraisal value. Another sign, the premium price shoppers pay for truffle oil, almost always made from synthetic flavors and not truffles at all. I continue to be credited with health benefits, some more legit than others. Most of the varieties you eat have an array of antioxidants, vitamins, and minerals, including all-important vitamin B and selenium. The maitake mushroom, also called hen of the woods, is remarkably high in vitamin D, but caveat emptor on those hyped adaptogenic mushroom teas. They're perfectly fine for you, but unlikely to provide the benefits listed on the label. In Northern California in 2017, heavy rainfall led to a bigger-than-usual crop of the death cap, a mild-tasting little thing that is responsible for 90% of human deaths by mushroom worldwide. That year, more than a dozen people got disastrously sick, sustaining neurological damage and requiring liver transplants. Another shroom craze about food is decidedly more fun. Magic mushrooms that contain psilocybin are again all the rage. Several species of mead come with a not entirely legal hallucinogenic included. Their surprising middle-aged users are often less interested in the trip than they are drawn to the promise of reducing anxiety, depression, and PTSD. Could I do all that? The research suggests yes. Would you expect anything less from something as magical as me? Mushroom stuffed mushrooms. Lightly trim the ends of 2 pounds of Kurmini mushrooms, separate the stems from the caps, and mince the stems in half the caps. Reserve the remaining caps to stuff. Melt 3 tablespoons butter in a 10-inch skillet over medium-high heat and add 1 large 4-ounce minced shallot and 1 teaspoon minced thyme leaves. Cook, stirring until tender, about 2 minutes. Add minced mushrooms and cook, stirring until water evaporates and mushrooms thicken and darken, about 15 minutes. Stir in 1/2 cup of panko breadcrumbs and season with salt and pepper. Toss remaining caps lightly on olive oil and salt. Stuff with cooked mushroom mixture and arrange in a rim sheet. Cook at 450 degrees until mushrooms are tender, about 20 minutes. Sprinkle grated cheddar cheese on each mushroom. Return to the oven and cook until cheese is melted and beginning to brown. And serve and enjoy. Humor in uniform. Officers don't like to lose. Exhibit A. One naval officer's write-up up in the base newspaper of our unit's lunchtime softball game. In a spirited end-of-season finale, the khaki special, officers, chiefs, team fought hard but finished the season in second place. Meanwhile, the enlisted personnel, the Blues, won their last game but finished next to last in the standings. What he failed to mention about the season, the two teams played only one game against each other. During basic training at Fort Dix, New Jersey, I was sent to the firing range to qualify as a marksman. After taking a few shots, I asked my sergeant how I'd done. Sonny told me, "You better learn to use a bayonet really well." While in paratrooper training school, I asked the instructor, "What happens if the parachute doesn't open?" "It's guaranteed," he reassured me. "If it doesn't open, you can just bring it back." Let's switch over now to Consumer Reports to a very, very important article. Financial advice in the age of coronavirus. Sound familiar? As the coronavirus pandemic burns like a wildfire across the country, millions of Americans are reeling from the financial damage left in its wake. Lost jobs, stalled careers, shattered businesses, mounting debt, and forestalled or abandoned retirement dreams. On May 9th, nearly 36.5 million unemployment claims had been filed, and according to estimates by the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, the jobless rate may eventually exceed 30%. For context, compare that with almost 10% unemployment during the financial crisis of 2007 and 2009, the Great Recession, and around 25% of unemployment at the peak of the Great Depression. The S&P 500, considered one of the best benchmarks of the stock market as a whole, fell almost 35% in March. Now, this is, by the way, this is an article from last month, from its February peak, and the U.S. gross domestic product is expected to contract by 5.9% in 2020. Actually, I should say it's from 2 months ago. It's an August edition. According to the International Monetary Fund, by comparison, GDP fell 4% from its peak during the Great Recession. CR has long offered guidance to consumer moments of financial crisis, going back as far as World War II. And so in the article that follows, we hope to offer advice that will help to restore a measure of control and stability in difficult times as we all endeavor to get on the road to recovery. And I'm sure, as you're well aware, the Radio Reading Service is a volunteer and donation-run organization. And so we're suffering too because people are not donating like these two. We had to cancel our gala, which was supposed to be last night. So, you know, if you feel generous and feel like you want to contribute, give us a call at our phone number and please, we'd love it. As the crisis continues to wreak havoc on the stock market, whipsaw 401k plans and undermine the ability to save, consumers are watching their retirement plans derail. And for many, this comes too close on the heels of the 2000 to 2009 recession, a hit that many Americans have still not recovered from. Rebounding from these financial setbacks won't be easy. The International Monetary Fund forecast a worse downturn this year than the Great Recession, and even financial experts are having troubles mapping out a road to recovery. This is an unprecedented situation, says Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, who thinks normal economic growth won't resume until a vaccine or treatment for the coronavirus is available a year or longer from now. If that timeline sounds discouraging, it may help to remember that the nation has recovered from financial calamities in the past, says William Bernstein, an investment advisor and author of The Four Pillars of Investing from McGraw-Hill. Americans have come through four recessions and six bear markets, including the Great Recession, when stocks fell more than 50% at their lowest point. Of course, it's still difficult to ride out any market downturn, particularly this one with all its uncertainties for the future. But holding a well-diversified portfolio, a mix of stocks and bonds geared to your risk tolerance and financial goals, remains the smartest strategy. As found in a study by Catherine Roy, chief retirement strategist at J.P. Morgan Asset Management, 401k investors who kept contributing to their plans during the Great Recession had fully recovered by March 2010, just 2 years after the bear market bottom. That was faster rebound than the market itself, which regained its pre-crash highs in March 2012. Granted, staying the course might not be possible if you become unemployed or your salary or hours have been reduced. But for those who can still save and invest, and especially if you were hoping to retire soon, it's crucial to know where you stand and decide whether you need to adjust. Here are some guidelines to follow. Review your asset mix. The coronavirus calamity notwithstanding, the key question remains how much money you want to keep in stocks versus bonds, based on your risk tolerance and financial goals. Bear in mind, most people need to maintain a stake in stocks, even in retirement, to get the long-term growth they need. But for those who prefer a more cautious strategy, and for older investors who have already amassed enough savings to afford a comfortable retirement, it may make sense to reduce the percentage you invest in stocks and increase your fixed income holdings, says David Blanchette, Director of Retirement Research at Morningstar. As a guide, the Vanguard Target Retirement 2030 Fund which holds 70% stocks and 30% in bonds, fell almost 15% in the first 3 months of this year, while the Vanguard Target 2015 fund, which means 40% stocks and 60% bonds, was down just 7.4%. You can compare the potential risk and returns of different asset mixes using an online tool, such as Bankrate's Asset Allocation Calculator. What to do? Take a new measure of how much risk you are comfortable with right now. Factors to consider may include your age. Older people have less time to rat out market downturn, while younger ones can even benefit from bear markets because they can buy more shares at low prices that will eventually appreciate in future bull markets. Another consideration is any change to your present financial situation that limits your ability to take risk. For example, if your job situation is shaky. Generally speaking, if you aren't panicking, that's a sign that you don't need to cut back on equities. Then keep your asset mix on track by rebalancing periodically. Shift just enough money from your winning investments to your laggards to restore your ideal mix. Make sure you're choosing low-cost funds, such as broad market index funds, which generally charge just 0.5% or less, versus 1% or more for many actively managed funds. The savings can increase your return substantially. Build up your cash reserves. One of the most effective measures for protecting your finances is to amass an emergency fund that can cover 3 to 6 months of expenses, perhaps as much as a year if your job isn't secure. That money should be kept in a safe, easily accessible account, which will spare you from having to tap retirement funds or run up your credit card balances for unexpected bills. What if you lack sufficient rainy day reserves? Scrutinize your budget to find ways to free up cash for savings. See, if you have no wiggle room, consider reducing your 401k contributions by a few percentage points temporarily until you have an adequate cash cushion. But try to keep saving enough to get your full employment match, if one is offered, says Margarita Chang, a certified financial planner, CFP, in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Those nearing retirement should build an even bigger cash reserve, enough to pay essential expenses for at least a year, said Harold Levinsky, a CFP and retired professor of personal financial planning at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, Texas. Without that reserve, you may end up tapping your retirement assets during a bear market or perhaps panicking and going to cash. What to do? Although interest rates have dwindled, you can earn above-average yields on your cash reserves at online banks, reaching as high as 1.7%. That might not sound impressive, but it beats the yield at 10-year Treasury securities, which is 0.7%, and savings account at walk-in banks, which are also 0.7%. You can search for high-yield savings accounts at Bankrate.com and DepositAccounts.com. Rethink your withdrawal rate. This is something people in or nearing retirement need to review, and the pandemic has given new urgency to designing a safe withdrawal strategy. The 4% rule is a traditional rule of thumb for retirement withdrawals. You pull out 4% of your portfolio in the first year, then increase that amount by inflation rate in subsequent years. Studies show that this strategy can minimize your risk of running out of money over a 30-year retirement. But you may be able to pull out more income by adopting a more flexible approach, according to research by Jonathan Guyton, a CFP in Edina, Minnesota, and Wilton Klinger, a professor at Raritan Valley Community College in Branchburg, New Jersey. Their 2006 study found that by heeding basic spending guardrails, you can start with a withdrawal rate of 4.6% and increase that amount in subsequent years without falling short. The key is to tighten your budget after years when the market is down, perhaps by skipping an inflation adjustment or cutting withdrawals by 10%. Still, to make sure your retirement income strategy is right for your current financial situation, you may want to consult a financial planner who can help you run the numbers. What to do? Retirees may want to consider skipping their required minimum distributions from their 401k plans and digital retirement accounts because that's permitted this year under the coronavirus relief package. If you can forego those withdrawals, your portfolio will have more time to recover from losses. Do you need a professional planner? If you want help with your financial strategy, consider hiring a certified financial planner. CFPs include brokers who buy and sell investments on a commission basis and registered investment advisors who charge a fee for advice. Brokers are required only to provide suitable investments but not to avoid conflicts of interest, e.g. recommending a high-cost fund that pays them a higher commission rather than other available better-performing funds. Investment advisors tend to have fewer conflicts of interest and follow a so-called fiduciary rule. By the way, that fiduciary rule now applies across the board, which requires them to put a customer's best interest at first. That rule, however, was rarely enforced, says Barbara Roper, Director of Investment Protection for the nonprofit Consumer Federation of America. Under a new Securities and Exchange Commission rule, known as the Regulation Best Interest, brokers and investment advisors must ask in their customers' best interest. But that rule, which was scheduled to go into effect in June 30th, does little to strengthen investors' protection or minimize conflict of interest, Roper says. For now, focus on pros who are only fee-only CFPs, meaning they are paid by the investor, not by third parties, and they offer comprehensive planning services. You can find candidates by searching at GarrettPlanningNetwork.com, NAPFA.org, that's NAPFA.org, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and XYPlanningNetwork.com. Having been in that line of work for over 30 years before I retired, two pieces of advice. First of all, ask for references if you're unsure about the advisor. And secondly, always be sure you know exactly what you're paying. They're required to tell you that. It's in all prospectuses. Obviously, the cost is important, and you must know that. Ways to overcome a cash crunch. The sudden shutdown of much of the U.S. economy during the coronavirus pandemic is causing a cash flow crisis for millions of Americans, sending many scrambling to pay bills and put food on the table. And there has been some government help. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, the $2.2 trillion federal rescue package passed in late March, has sent direct cash payments to many Americans, expanded unemployment benefits, and offered temporary relief from certain types of debt and financial obligations. Among other provisions, but it's best only a partial solution. So we put together a step-by-step approach to coming up with funds to get you and your loved ones through this difficult period. We ordered them roughly in what Christine Bentz, Director of Personal Finance at the investment research company Morningstar, calls a hierarchy of least bad options. Even so, you might have more options than you think. Delay paying some bills. One of the most effective ways to free up cash is to not spend it on anything that's less than essential. Business owners and accountants consider this approach a critical tool for staying afloat during lean times, and it can be applied to personal finances as well. It basically means being judicious about which bills you pay and which you don't, and in what order, while keeping a close eye on the money going into and out of your accounts and planning ahead. The line between which bills need to be paid right away and which can wait has shifted dramatically. That's partly because of provisions in the coronavirus relief package and partly because businesses realize they need to help consumers through the crisis. Most of the major credit card companies, lenders, utilities have all offered some sort of special accommodation for people facing COVID-related hardships, says Brooke McCleary, Vice President of Communications at the nonprofit National Foundation for Credit Counseling and a longtime credit counselor himself. Start by looking at your housing expenses. A key provision of the coronavirus relief law gives anyone with a federally backed mortgage a temporary break from making principal and interest payments for up to a year. Services, and there's information on that we'll look at later. Services of many non-government-backed mortgages also may be willing to grant similar forbearance periods. But forbearances are not automatic. You must call your service to request one. Protection from renters are also more limited. But the coronavirus relief law temporarily halts evictions from properties with federally backed mortgages, and several states and municipalities have suspended evictions for now. For other renters, McCleary recommends contacting your landlord and asking for a hardship accommodation. Many states have also barred utilities from cutting off services during the crisis, and many utility companies have announced assistance programs that are giving customers the option of deferred payment plans. Check your utility's website. Repayment of many student loans can also be put on hold. The new law automatically suspends monthly payments on federally held student loans until September 30th, with no interest in the meantime. The New York State has cut a deal with student loan services to give borrowers with private student loans at least 90 days of forbearance with no late fees or effect on their credit reports, and consumer advocates are encouraging other states to follow suit. Many credit card companies are also making accommodations for consumers, but communication is crucial. None of these programs kick in automatically, McClure said. You need to reach out. The coronavirus aid law directed the federal government to deliver economic impact payments to most Americans, regardless of whether their income has been affected by the COVID-19 crisis, and the estimated 90% of taxpayers who are eligible may have already received them. The law also expanded unemployment insurance benefits for affected workers. These include the $600 per week increase, which unfortunately has stopped, for each recipient for up to 4 months, and an extension of unemployment benefits to workers who are usually not eligible, including self-employed workers, independent contractors, and those with a limited work history. And the federal government is giving states incentive to eliminate any waiting week period that prevent newly unemployed workers from getting benefits right away. Nobody should have any qualms about applying for unemployment insurance, says Richard Carteret, former director of Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and former attorney general of Ohio. That is money that you earned during the many periods of your life when you were employed. Also, don't forget to make use of community resources such as food banks and health care clinics. McCleary says, any money you can save by not spending it at the grocery store or on a doctor's appointment is money you can spend on something else you need. Non-retirement savings. If you had the foresight and the means to build up an emergency savings fund, well, the coronavirus crisis certainly qualifies as legitimate use. That's the gold standard at a time like this, Ben says. If not, the next pool to consider in non-retirement savings you might have, including investments in non-tax sheltered brokerage accounts. If you need to choose which investment to cash out, says Christine Bentz at Morningstar, start with short and intermediate term bond funds, where the resulting tax hit will be minimal because these investments have generally held up during the stock market downturn. Plus, you pay taxes on those funds as you go. Selling stock for cash during the crisis is likely to lock in recent market losses. But if you need to do it, Bentz adds, consider stocks you purchased recently, on which you may at least survive a tax loss write-off at tax time. Another on-retirement asset that some people may be able to tap is cash whole life insurance policy. Your heirs will inherit less if you draw down the cash value, but the withdrawals are typically tax-free up to the amount you put into the policy, Bent says. Use your savings with caution. Why should you avoid using retirement savings, even during this emergency? One of the standard reasons is no longer relevant. The 10% penalty for early 401k and individual retirement account withdrawals is suspended because of the pandemic, but others do remain in place. First, you will still have to pay income taxes on most withdrawals, which means you'll have to pull out more money than you might need right now. And second, your retirement could suffer disproportionately not only by the amount you withdraw, but also through the lost earnings on that money. Don't use a temporary situation as an excuse to put your long-term financial future at risk, says Bruce McCleary at the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. You might need every penny of that money later on. That said, if you must use retirement savings, do it in this order. Roth IRA. Because contributions to a Roth IRA are made with post-tax dollars, you can withdraw the contributed amount at any time without paying income taxes or penalties. You'll still owe taxes if you pull out any investment earnings before the retirement age, or if you haven't met the 5-year holding period requirements, unless you meet certain exceptions. 401k loan. If you need to tap tax-sheltered retirement accounts, taking a loan from your own 401k account is the best option. It's better than an outright withdrawal because you won't have to pay income taxes on the amount. As long as you pay it back within a specific period, usually 5 years, you will have to pay back the loan with interest, Ben says, but you'll be paying to yourself. Plus, the coronavirus relief law doubled the allowable size of 401k loans to $100,000. Hardship withdrawal. Though still a less-than-ideal way to generate cash, the legislation did make early withdrawals from 401k and IRAs less painful for anyone whose health or income was affected by the coronavirus pandemic. It eliminates the 10% early withdrawal penalty on 401k withdrawals up to $100,000 and lets you spread the income tax burden of the withdrawal over 3 years. You can also repay it within 3 years, in which case you claim a tax refund. If you can avoid taking out a loan, McCleary says, you should. Barring your way through a temporary hardship situation risks putting yourself in an even deeper hole than you can't dig out of, he said. But if you must, do it carefully in the following order of preferences. Personal hardship loans. Many financial institutions are currently offering special short-term, a few months or to a couple of year loans, to customers affected by the COVID-19 crisis. Some offer relatively generous repayment terms, including low interest or a flat fee with no interest. Some also promised no debt collections and no negative credit reporting. But there are risks involved. Several financial companies require that you agree to automatic repayment plans, says CR Financial Policy Manager Christina Tertural, which could trigger overdraft fees if you're short on cash. Your best option, Tertural says, is likely to be a bank or credit union you already do business with, and be certain you understand how these loans need to be repaid, she adds. Home equity line of credit. HELOCs come with relatively low interest rates, which is why some financial experts say these should be your first fallback during a cash crunch, particularly if you maintain a good credit rating and have a fair amount of equity in your home. Bent says, if that's not the case, however, think twice about a HELOC. Bent says borrowers who aren't as well positioned could be asked to pay high interest rates and could even risk losing their homes if they can't make their payments. Plus, HELOCs generally require a full underwriting process, so if you don't already have one in place, it's likely to be a speedy source of funds. Credit cards. With high interest rates and minimum payment requirements, they don't make a dent in the principal account. Credit cards are the single easiest way to wreck your financial standing, Ben says. So unless you have a clear idea of how you repay your credit card debts, consider them a last resort. How to get help with your mortgage. One of the key provisions of Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act passed in late March allows many homeowners struggling to pay their mortgage to postpone payments with extra charges and fees for a period of up to a year. But feelings of relief soon gave way to outrage. Many homeowners who've lost their jobs or seen their income reduced reportedly calling their banks to enroll, but being told they have to make up some skip payments in full as soon as the forbearance period is over. Many were given very brief timelines as short as 3 months. It's just kicking the can down the road, adding to an already stressful time, Maryland healthcare worker Antonio Calderon told CR after being told that he'd have to come up with more than $4,000 after 3 months, even though his work hours had been slashed and his wife Leah, an emergency room nurse, was on the front lines of the COVID-19 crisis. Having to pay back a lump sum after months of no or severely decreased income is no help to me. Vanessa Marchettino of Oceanport, New Jersey, said after getting a similar message, banks got a huge bailouts in the past. It's time for them to sacrifice. As it turns out, the guidance from mortgage companies was in most cases wrong. In fact, many homeowners who arrange a COVID-19-related forbearance, and all who have federally backed mortgages, will be offered a range of less painful ways to get current on their home loans at the end of the forbearance period. The confusion stems from the fact that the coronavirus relief package didn't contain information on what happens when the forbearance period ends, says Lisa Serkin, senior staff attorney at the National Housing Law Project, NHLP. It provided no consistent rule or framework about what's supposed to happen, she says. That framework came a bit later, when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which combined own the majority of U.S. mortgages and will therefore determine how most services, the companies that manage mortgage payments, wind down most forbearance, issued guidance listing a range of workout options for consumers to catch up on missed payments, depending on how much they can afford each month. Many mortgage services, at least for a period of time, did a poor job of communicating to customers how they'd expect to get back on track after forbearance. SIC can expect some combination of confusion about the federal guidelines, lack of internal communication, and an institutional tendency to discourage forbearance contributed to the bad information being given to consumers. Services, after all, on the hook to pay the mortgage investors even if the homeowners don't make their payments. But to be clear, if you were one of the many who were misinformed when you took a forbearance, you are likely to be offered an alternative repayment plan that does not require a large lump sum payment. The following recommendations, based on interviews with industry experts, consumer advocates, and representatives of mortgage servicers, should help clear up any remaining confusion. Is your mortgage covered? While the coronavirus relief law may let you hold off on paying your mortgage for almost a year without incurring any fees or extra charges, you cannot simply ignore your mortgage payments in the months ahead. That's because the relief does not kick in automatically. You must contact your mortgage service, tell us that you need help because of the coronavirus pandemic, and arrange for a loan forbearance. Until you do, says CR Financial Policy Manager Christina Terrault, the mortgage is still due. When you call, have your loan number, which can be found in your mortgage statement, ready, and take careful note on your conversations and be patient. Clogged phone lines, long wait times are common. To avoid them, consider using the service's website or account portal. Second, recognize that the mortgage provisions in the coronavirus relief law do not apply to all mortgages, only to federally backed mortgages. That means that any mortgage that is owned, guaranteed, or insured by one of several federal agencies or government-sponsored enterprises, such as the Federal National Mortgage Association, Fannie Mae, the Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corp, Freddie Mac, the Federal Housing Administration, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Department of Agriculture. Of course, many of us have no idea whether our mortgage is connected to one of these entities, but there's a good chance the law applies to you. The NHLP says roughly 70% of outstanding single-family mortgages in the U.S. are owned or backed by a federal agency, and about 90% of mortgages created since the 2007 to 2000 financial crisis are covered by the law, estimates Kenneth Kumbrucker, vice president of the mortgage information site HSH. How to know for sure? Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac offer online lookup tools at knowyouroptions.com/loanlookup and https://www.freddiemac.com/loanlookup, respectively. Your mortgage services also know, Gumbringer says, and in any case, you'll need to contact your service to take advantage of the new protections. Be aware that customer service reps might not have clarity about how different types of mortgages should be treated, Sitkin says, so borrowers should check their own documentation to be prepared to take a deep breath, or several, during their conversation with the services. Ask to speak to a supervisor if necessary, and consider seeking assistance from a housing counseling agency if needed, she says. Even if it turns out your mortgage is not covered by the law, it's probably worth contacting your service and discussing your options, Gumbringer says. In the current environment, regulators and legislatures are strongly encouraging lenders of all stripes to work with borrowers. How long do you need relief? Under the relief package, services of federally backed mortgages must let you skip payments for up to 360 days if you request it. But the meaning of up to is slightly ambiguous, Gumbringer says, and many consumers are being offered only 60 to 90 days of forbearance right off the bat. If during the initial forbearance period it becomes clear that you need more time, contact your servicer again. The law includes several other important protections for consumers seeking forbearance. The first, services may not charge any fees, penalties, or interest beyond what the borrower would have paid if at all payments had been made on schedule. Secondly, borrowers do not have to provide any proof of financial hardship to receive forbearance. That is, in contrast to industry practice during ordinary times, when lenders and loan services generally grant forbearance at their own discretion and typically require borrowers to prove they need to postpone payments because of serious financial hardship. And third, your decision to seek forbearance can't be reported to credit agencies as non-payment. After all, Gumbringer says, not being able to pay your mortgage during the coronavirus pandemic is not a reflection of your creditworthiness. Is forbearance right for you? Nobody who needs it should feel sheepish by asking to postpone their mortgage payments. Also, note that the law doesn't make clear for how long services must offer forbearance. So think ahead. You may have no problem paying your mortgage this month, but what about a few months from now, Gumbringer says? Don't wait until you're deep in the hole. It could be too late. On the other hand, if you don't anticipate substantial loss of income during the COVID-19 pandemic and can still pay your mortgage, you probably should, says Debbie Goldberg, Vice President of Housing Policy and Special Projects at the National Fair Housing Alliance. One reason is that you avoid unnecessarily clogging the phone lines for people who more urgently need a reprieve, she says. Another is that you'll eventually have to make up for missed payments, and Goldberg adds, borrowers will have to negotiate their services about the terms and options for repayment. How will you pay it back? The options include simply adding missed payments to the end of the mortgage, which many consumer advocates believe to be the best option for many consumers who can afford to restart their monthly payment. It's the simplest, cleanest way to do it for everyone involved, Askin says. Others will be asked to catch up to the original payment schedule by resuming their full monthly payments and making modest extra payments over a period of, say, a few years. Borrowers who are unable to resume full payments could be offered a loan modification where the payments are lowered and the term extended further into the future, and those unable to pay anything going forward could lose their homes. Services of federally backed mortgages are instructed to contact borrowers at least 30 days before their forbearance ends to determine an appropriate workout option, and the nation's three largest mortgage services, Chase, Wells Fargo, and a company called Mr. Cooper, have stated that they will, on a case-by-case basis, offer a range of ways for borrowers who use forbearance and become current in their loans. But Sitkin says servicers may also want to be clear that there are risks involved in forbearance. The hope is that most borrowers will be evaluated and offer a resolution that works for both parties, she says, but that's not guaranteed. Even if you don't come to an agreement, everyone who took forbearance is, in fact, technically on the hook to make up missed payments as soon as the period is over. Well, I'm going to have to finish this next week because it's too much time, too much information for 2 minutes and 39 seconds. But I will catch a couple other things with the coronavirus. Car care tips during coronavirus. Check the oil level. Driving with low oil can ruin your engine. Check the oil level according to instructions in the owner's manual. If it's low, you can easily top it off yourself on most cars. But never overfill. Jiffy Lube, Valvoline, and other shops will change the oil and do other basic services while you stay in the car. Stretch out the service interval. If pandemic is making you reluctant to get your car serviced, a few hundred extra miles between oil changes or other maintenance work won't hurt a car. That's otherwise being well cared for, Ebbetson says. But if your check engine light is on, he advises that you make an appointment with a local repair shop. Ask what measures is taken to reduce the risk of virus transmission. Some shops are offering pickup and drop-off service. There are also mobile mechanics in many areas who can come to you. As a precautionary measure, use a reduction solution of at least 70% alcohol to clean high-touch surfaces such as the steering wheel after someone else has been in your car. Spin your wheels. Drive the car at least once a week for 20 minutes or more at a time to keep the battery charged. Driving the car weekly will also keep the brake calipers from seizing up due to a lack of use and will also wear away any rust that may have formed on the brake disc if you park your vehicle outside. Don't let your gas go bad. If you're driving less or not at all, gasoline sitting in your fuel tank can be degrading. Gas can start to go bad in as little as 3 months, sapping engine power and causing performance problems. To extend the life of your fuel in your tank, he recommends using a fuel stabilizer such as foam or a Stabil, which are sold online and in auto parts stores and hardware stores. For best results, add the stabilizer to the tank, then top it off with fuel. Keeping the tank filled reduces oxygen and condensation, which hastens fuel breakdown. By the way, I've used that when my son-in-law was overseas and I babysat his car. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time for the continuation of the cash aspect. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.